It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. It is the podcast that puts the spotlight firmly on second place. Welcome back to another episode of the show. We are recording live at a shared universe in Eatontown, New Jersey. Mike and Ming taking good care of us here as always. Thank you very much to those guys. And of course, we're recording at their studio, which means we have one of the best producers of podcasts in this here state of New Jersey. The big kahuna behind the ones and twos.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, what's going on, man? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for getting up early. I know we are ruining your Saturday morning cartoons yet again here.
It's okay. But I only missed the first 30 minutes of He-Man. It's okay.
I was waiting for you to say, oh, we have DVR now.
It's you okay. Can DVR that.
Of course, here with me, as always, for our regular listeners, my handsome Dilf of a father sitting across from me.
Hey, here we go.
How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, sir? we're just top dollar here all the way.
I hear. I enjoyed our. We had a silent car ride down until the coffee kicked in around exit 142, I want to say, and then all of a sudden things got amicable. We've brought on one of our. We've brought on a longtime listener, and honest to God,
one of the pioneers of listeners, I think. Right,
indeed. One of my best friends on this planet, Mr. Tristan Ryan Bedrero. How you doing, sir? You doing okay?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm excellent, bud. We got a really good episode here for you. I'm stoked to bring you on for this one. Let the record show, by the way, Tristan petitioned endlessly to be a guest on this show. So by sheer nature of me being a son of a bitch, we had to push him back about 6 or 7 months.
So. Stop the whining. We'll put you on. We'll put you on.
It's good.
I do want to say, am I not a dilf of a father?
No, I would agree. It's actually a good point. Tristan does have children now, despite the state of New Jersey's every effort. no, you are
forced sterilization, Kev. Or
yeah, that messes with me too.
I mean, I try to my best on that level, also.
Tristan is a father. If you didn't see that episode of Maury, it has been confirmed. So. Not for nothing, pretty interesting guy here we're going to talk about today. Tristan and I have been friends since I was, I think, like 13 or 14 years old when I first met you. And we met up at the glorious Camp Lewis, which some people know all about, which I have a couple jokes in my stand-up act that are catering towards that. But so we'll leave that on the table here for now. But a couple years before I met you, Tristan Ryan, we went over to a family vacation that my father took me on to Gettysburg National Park, all right? The battlefield commemoration, if you will. It's pretty much Disney World for Civil War buffs.
There you go. All right?
That's what I'm going to call it. But there's this one name that stood out the entire time there because the guy is a central figure in the battle, and you just – this goofy shit about him. He's like a one-man Ripley's Believe It or Not. Just a fascinating guy here, man. So we're going to talk about him today. We're going to talk about Devil Dan Sickles, okay? Now, Dan Sickles sounds like some sort of a product or something like that, but Dan Sickles is a fascinating dude here. Do you guys know anything? I know Larry knows about him, and I know Tristan's done some research here. Cahoons, just for the listeners at home, do you know anything about this guy?
Not a clue.
All right, but you know about Gettysburg, though, right?
Yeah.
The pivotal battle of the Civil War, if you will. Have you ever been there?
No, actually.
All right, you have to go.
It's a definite close-at-hand road trip.
Well, as I recall, Dad, you've often heard Gettysburg referred to as a drinking town with a history problem?
Yeah, a good drinking town with a history problem, right? Exactly.
Well, I tortured our family, as you were talking about earlier, because there was an audio cassette tape you could listen to that as you drove around the park in your, we have a Mercury Sable back
whatever
then.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
The hot rod.
Yeah, we had a station wagon to go around. Which, by the way, station wagon, terrifying because they're like, oh, well, we can put the young children in the back where they can face the oncoming traffic. Terrifying.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The way back seat.
Oh, yeah. And you just see that, I mean, people waving to you, middle finger, stuff like that. I mean, just terrifying.
Well, I can see your dad as Chevy Chase driving the Wally World.
Not yet. It's a lash grandma to the roof.
Yeah, the Hoffman. There's a reason we never had a dog. But, that being said here, as you would drive around the battlefield of Gettysburg, the tape instructions would literally say, when you arrive at this monument, press play. So then you turn off the tape and you drive up to the monument. And you keep hearing about this guy, Dan Sickles, and you're just like, you want to talk about a slapstick personality. Like, there's almost a Leslie Nielsen quality to him.
The Looney Tune of the Civil War.
Yeah, from the files of Police Squad. but, yeah, he is just a goofy dude. And then you're sitting here reading about him as an adult, and I was like, this guy has fascinated me for 20-something years. And I'm so excited to start talking about him today. So without further ado, guys, American loser, Dan Sickles.
So this is something you've been looking forward to since, like, forever.
He is the spirit animal of this show, right. I would say,
right.
That I'm just blown away by him. And the shit that I found out in researching him, that after 20 years of knowing his story.
You never knew.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Now, here's what's fun, too, is that his life happens in chapters, and each chapter could be a movie in and of itself. So, to give us the inauspicious start to an auspicious story, born in 1819 in New York City, Daniel Edward Sickles would prove that life happens in chapters. Chapters of his book would include senator, murderer, insane man, Civil War hero, amputee, Roman Emperor of the South, womanizer, tabloid fodder, jealous husband, corrupt politician, and international agitator.
I remember those were the alternate titles for the Harry Potter series. I liked those movies.
Oh, man. I've never seen those movies, and my goddaughter Sophia won't talk to me anymore. Which, Sickles was born in New York City, the son of a patent lawyer and a descendant of the Knickerbockers. Lawrence Patrick, what are the Knickerbockers? Other than a sub-500 basketball team.
Yeah. That, he wasn't a descendant of a basketball player, but the Knickerbockers was a term given to old-school, old-family New Yorkers that were really kind of the original Dutch settlers of New York and the surrounding area. And the Knickerbockers were pretty well financed too. They were the ones that came here first, made a boatload of money, and continued to have a whole lot of power and influence.
So essentially, it was a lucrative way of being the first person to comment on a YouTube video. So when people write first, when they're the first commenter on it, they always think that's some sort of a big, you know, accomplishment or something. But the Knickerbockers, you know, one of the first families of New York, if you will.
Well, so. It was multiple families, but yeah, collectively put together, known as the Knickerbockers.
Well, fascinating group on that one here. Now, as we were saying,
pre-Rockefeller or?
Oh, so,
yeah.
Very much pre-Rockefeller, but the second episode we're recording today, we do get into a little bit on Mr. Rockefeller himself, which I think you'll appreciate, Cahoons. That being said, he was a descendant of the Knickerbockers, and Dan learned the printer's trade and attended a small school, a safety school, one might call it, New York University. All right, so he wound up going to NYU. It wasn't quite called that yet. I forget what the original name of the school was. But I guarantee you they didn't have a film program back then. Mm-hmm. After studying law for a brief period of time, and this is what I keep noticing, is that everybody who's interesting in history or who pulls off some ridiculous feat, they're always lawyers.
Right.
All right? We are literally, it is, if you talk about old England, you're going to talk about, like, the knights and stuff like that. Literally, almost all of America's stories, it's lawyers instead of knights. So, weird shit with all that here, man. But now, during the time that he's entering politics and being a part of New York, if you will, for listeners of the show, this is the height of Tammany Hall power. Yeah. All right? So, pretty fascinating shit with all that here, man. Now, this guy Sickles, pretty enigmatic personality. I'm going to say a big personality. Kind of like you, Tristan. That's I picture Dan Sickles as you in certain ways.
Knowing what I know about this guy, I kind of take it as a compliment. It's not a compliment. That hurts, kind of.
Here's the weird part. In his story, as we're going to unfold, it's part compliment, part brutal insult.
That's right.
So thank you, you fucking asshole.
That's a left-handed compliment if there ever was one.
Oh, that's the move here. Now, here's why I was going to say he's a big personality. Everybody knows him in town for the most part. And he's loosely associated with this Tammany Hall machine, as we've covered in three very, very well-written episodes, I might say. Sickles routinely would lie about his age. So we know that we believe he was born in 1819, but he always lies about his age. One of the reasons why he did it, very common back then to lie about your age too. But one of the reasons that he would lie is so that he could court younger women. And one of the moves here, he had this gorgeous like, all right, we're talking Knickerbockers, and the Irish are just starting to come over to New York City. Could you imagine what a gorgeous Mediterranean Italian looking what Marissa Tomei would be to early New York? I mean, coming over there, man. That's what we're getting with his wife, who is 15 years old at the time he starts courting her. Who,
you're being very polite with that whole courting aspect.
Well, she was 15,
yeah,
and he was 32, so more than twice her age, and both families were against his courtship of her. But I want to introduce her name real quick, Teresa Baggioli, all right?
Dude, that's like now, us in our 30s, being at the mall and seeing these girls walking around the mall and being like, all right, is she 15? Is she 18? Yeah. Either way, I'm going to look the other way. And this guy's like, I want that right there.
Yeah, and he had met her actually when she was a small child, and then comes back later in life to see this 15-year-old. So you're right, Tris. I mean, here you are, a grown man walking around the mall, and you're checking out some sophomore in high school, right?
And you're like, yeah.
This is definitely raining from personal experience, isn't it?
No, you know, let's be honest. They 15-year-olds dress like 20-year-olds dress when I was that age. So, you know, so it's kind of uncomfortable. It's like, all right, you know, are you 18? Are you 15?
Where are you at?
Either way, this is nasty. I'm looking the other way. Why are you dressed like this? You know, and this guy's just like, I want it. And I'm going to have it, and that's what I want.
Yeah, Dan Sickles, everybody.
He was a hound dog, no doubt.
Well, he was a known womanizer, like you were saying. So this guy's he's getting it.
That's the third movie in the trilogy, right?
Pretty much. He's moving around. He's seen with prostitutes a lot. He's a friend of the houses of ill repute, if you will.
He loves the painted ladies.
He enjoys it, man. And not for nothing, that should speak to you about how hot Teresa was. Because when you hear, like, there's a lot of people where we'll look at their old photos, and you can sit there and be like, oh, I can see why she would be attractive for the time. Then you look at Teresa, and you're just like, okay, I get it. he called his shot early with her. I'll put it that way. So that's why she's a sophomore in high school by most definitions, but he's sitting there and he goes, this is an investment. interesting guy here, as we were talking about. Both families object to the marriage, but Teresa, to her credit, by the way, she's the daughter of a music teacher. And she is also she speaks five languages, and
she was convent educated, so she's sweet Polly purebred too.
And
a looker.
Yeah, it's kind of a goofy thing with all that stuff too, because I think I was going through it the other day. I think I've dated one girl in my life that was not Italian. That there's just that Irish and Italian connection on this one here. So imagine what the Knickerbockers have going on with all that stuff when they've never seen this, you know, Mediterranean gorgeous woman. Like I keep saying, Marissa Tomei, or a Monica Bellucci of sorts. So within a few years of the marriage, Sickles is now serving at a high level in U.S. government affairs overseas in the United Kingdom, or England as it was known at the time. And he is one of the right-hand men of James Buchanan. Who's James Buchanan, LP?
Well, James Buchanan is going to go on to become president, but at the time he's appointed by our president, Franklin Pierce, to serve as an ambassador over in England. So Sickles has got connections with the Buchanans. As a matter of fact, when he and Teresa get married, initially they have a civil service marriage. And then both families like flip out, and they are married in the Catholic Church. So Teresa and Dan are married in the Catholic Church by none other than John Hughes, the Archbishop of New York. So where were
16 candles, John?
Yeah, we got some pretty heavy hitters here involved with both families. Sickles was a congressman for New York, New York State congressman. He is hooking in with James Buchanan. Buchanan is appointed by Pierce to go over to England to be an ambassador over there, and requests that Dan Sickles becomes his secretary or his assistant over in England. There's a lot of objections that we're going to send this lowlife Sickles to represent the United States over in England. He's already been admonished by the New York State Congress for parading around the halls of Congress with known prostitutes and stuff. I mean, he's just throwing it in everybody's face.
First, there's Sickles Take Manhattan, and really then now there's freaking Sickles Takes London.
With good old Fanny White.
we're getting there.
Now, Fanny White, fascinating character, too. She is one of the most famous and successful, I believe the term was courtesan back then, which is loosely translates to whore for money.
That's right. Well, if you want to bring in the Sopranos pronunciation, a hooah.
Tony, she was a hooah. But Fanny White, one of the most famous prostitutes in American history, who's an interesting woman in and of herself. We might revisit her for another episode down the road here. But he actually brought Fanny White over to England with him.
Yeah. Now, just to back that up a bit, Kev, too, Dan Sickles is married, right? He gets married, both civil service and then a Catholic service, leaves for England. Oh, by the way, Teresa had their first child 7 months after the marriage. So just saying, you know, that
Sickles is early on everything.
It might have been another miracle. But anyhow, she has the kid 7 months, and the daughter's name is Laura Buchanan Sickles. So he's given his daughter's middle name from Buchanan, same spelling as James Buchanan. So yeah, I don't know whether he's schmoozing Buchanan big time or whatever, but
well, imagine if you worked in politics and my middle name was Reagan. You know, kind of a goofy thing with that stuff.
Yeah, but he goes over to England and leaves the newborn child and his new wife behind, goes over to England with Fanny White, and now is parading around London with Fanny White, and refuses to participate in a salute or a toast to Queen Victoria. That didn't go over too well with, you know, imagine you're a diplomat and you refuse to toast the Queen of England, and then he introduces Miss Fanny White, not as Fanny White, but as Miss Fanny Bennett. And the reason for that is back in New York, there's a newspaper publisher by the name of Bennett that absolutely, they hated one another. So now he's introducing this whore to the Queen of England as Miss Bennett.
Your biggest rival. So.
No way.
So Tristan, let me ask you a question. You're a married man.
Yes.
I consider myself to be friends with your wife, okay? And I mean that's true because there's people that you have friends that just get married and you can deal with their wife. I actually consider your wife to be a friend of mine, that if I went to her for advice on something, she'd give it to me. Now, question for you, how would she feel if you said you were going overseas to England for work and you were going – she's pregnant with the kid at home and you're going to take her you're leaving her at home and you're going overseas with Jenna Jameson. That's essentially what's going on over here. How would she respond to that?
Well, considering when she was pregnant, I wasn't allowed to go to my friend's house without hearing that she was pregnant and home with one kid, I think England would be it would be one of two things. Kind of like a friend of ours when he was in the Navy. you go out on ship, and one of two things happens: your wife is there, or she's not.
For the record, it's not me we're talking about here. Right. This is a friend of ours, Jim McCabe. Jim McCabe, if you're listening, bud, which I'm going to send you the link for this episode. Jim has a fascinating story where he goes, I thought we had more furniture than this.
Oh, when he comes home? Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how that would have been. I would have came home and the house would have been empty except for the cats.
Jesus.
There's a real big empty here.
So no England for you.
No.
Yeah, that would have been out of bounds.
And then to double down on it, now you're out in the open over there with Jenna Jameson. And when they ask what her name is, in order to present her, you just have to be like, oh, this is – and then you just come up with the name of somebody you hate and present them as a family member of theirs.
Jenna Padone.
That poor man. If he's listening, well, he's not.
I'm not going to front. This is quite hilarious. This dude, like, I know he's on American Loser, but that's That's kind of a baller move in a little bit of a sense.
If you're impressed, Kahuna,
you haven't seen nothing
yet. Terrified of what's going to happen here. So now it's funny too because Sickles, he's got this gorgeous home over in D.C. When he comes back over, he's plugged in, well connected, like you said, with Buchanan and Pierce, President Pierce,
right?
Who's, by the way, is considered one of the worst presidents of all time because at this time the Union is deteriorating.
Right. So Pierce is, you know, there's a lot of blame to put why the Civil War actually took place, that it came down to shooting at one another because of Pierce's inability to reconcile with one another.
Well, they also allude that he is potentially was a gay man, that I've heard some reference, because he was a bachelor, I believe, his entire time in office. But that's President Franklin Pierce, who he still takes care of. There's a tribute system here. Tammany Hall didn't invent a tribute system. These guys are all plugged in. They're, you know, you do a favor for me, I'll take care of that, and then I'll bring you on with this thing. You know, so it's always a move. It's like Ming and Kevin Smith. You know what I mean? They always watch out for each other and that stuff. I appreciate that part of their friendship. But that being said, Sickles is now home in Washington, D.C., not home in New York, but back in the United States. And he buys this gorgeous home over in Lafayette Square.
Yeah, but Kev, I think you're leaving out that at this particular point, too. Now, he's back from England. Buchanan, through the help of Tammany Hall, and Sickles was definitely plugged into Tammany Hall, and Tammany Hall was instrumental in getting Buchanan elected president. Sickles is now a congressman, and Buchanan is president, and Sickles is like his right-hand man. You could not get anything done in Washington without going through Sickles to get to Buchanan. So he was the gatekeeper, if you will, to Buchanan, making appointments and making the wheelings and dealings. So, yeah, he's in Washington, but he's there as an elected representative.
Well, and you're right. I did leave that part out here because we're doing this on iPad now, so I scroll ahead a little bit too far. We didn't want to rustle our papers no more. So,
we're starting to retire out papers now. We're putting in.
We're going green.
We've gone green. It's part of an initiative on this podcast, started by Dr. Kate Lepus of a biology PhD. here's where his larger than life persona gets even fucking bigger. All right. He's got this gorgeous house in Lafayette Square, which is literally within view of the White House.
You can cross the street from the White House.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. It was like the place to live, kind of a thing, especially with a lot of the Southern representatives.
Well, you want to talk about an easy commute to work? You know, if you literally,
right?
You know, I can kind of almost picture Dan Sickles taking the comb through his hair as he's walking across the street. Shit, I'm late. I got a thing.
It's like sleeping in the trading post and having to walk into the pole for flag morning.
Well said. Point is that if you have an opinion about Dan Sickles, it was probably a strong one. That's if you hated him or you loved him. You definitely had a strong opinion about Mr. Dan Sickles. One man that he seemed to have – this guy's interesting because he's almost a good contrast to Dan Sickles himself – in that he's also a guy that people have strong opinions about. Philip Barton Key, known as the handsomest man in all of Washington, is the current district attorney at the time and the son of the writer of the Star-Spangled Banner, Francis Scott Key. All right, so we've unpacked him a little bit here.
He's got some notoriety. People know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's socially or, you know, just admiring him from a distance or whatever, but he's got some influence for sure.
He's a pretty boy.
And if you look at his picture, he looks like Clive Owen is what I'm going to compare him to. If you look at this guy's portrait, so he looks like Clive Owen with a mustache.
Yeah, and Dan and Philip Key, they're buds. I mean, they're palsy wowsy kind of a thing. So they're making all the social scenes, and Dan Sickles was not shy about having a good time, obviously. So,
hey, do you like whores? Yeah, I do, actually. Do you like drinking and cohorting around with whores? I do. Yes, that's correct. We should get into politics, man.
Did we just become friends? That's
right.
So these two are pals until an incident, you know. I'm going to refer to it as an incident as we continue to unpack this here, because half the joy of this show is watching Kahuna's jaw hit the fucking floor when he hit some of the bigger notes on the show here.
Okay.
It's going to take a second here, bud, but so apparently this handsomest man in all of Washington, D.C. is pretty much banging his wife, banging Dan Sickles' wife. So Teresa, this gorgeous Italian girl, is now having a pretty much out in the open affair.
Yeah.
With Philip Barton Key.
Yeah, everyone in D.C. knew about it except for Dan Sickles.
Because he was out and about doing his thing that actually initially it was Sickles who asked Key to escort his wife to these various social functions because he was – I don't want to say tied up. That might give it the wrong slant, but he was involved with other social affairs that, a proper lady needed an escort. So who better than the most handsome guy in all of Washington, D.C., but Philip Key. So, you know, he obliged. He helped old poor Dan out, escorting his Dan's wife around town.
I almost associated with, because technically they never had a physical relationship in the example I'm about to use. But I always likened this to how Tony Soprano had Carmella get driven around by Furio, and she fell in love with Furio. And then, like, Tony's enraged by that. But he's enraged at that when he's finding out because he's pretty much getting a blowjob from a hooker at Satin Dolls.
In this case, Scotty really didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, old Philip Barton Key over here, a fascinating guy in his own right, starts carrying on this affair, literally moves across the street into an apartment. Which you said is not a great place compared to his gorgeous
one. No, it was like two blocks away. I think it was on 15th. And it was – there was almost an immediate drop-off from Lafayette Square to the other parts of town that weren't quite so nice that he rents this house specifically to carry on with Dan Sickles' wife, Teresa.
Well, here's how smooth he was, by the way. What he would do is he would walk out – supposedly the affair started on Sickles' own couch.
That, in Sickles' house.
Right. He walked away. And he's like, "Hey, you guys need anything? I'll be right back." And then goes out, and he's so one track minded of getting around with a cohort and with his pals out in D.C. and frequenting, having his own good time, that he's ignoring his wife's needs at the house. And I'll just leave you alone with the handsomest man in all of D.C. Nothing can go wrong here. And I know Philip Barton Key's a good guy because he goes to the whorehouses with me. You know, if you can't trust him, who can you trust? So. That being said, they go ahead and this affair starts to get carried out, and they get more and more daring as they go on because it's almost like I dare you to catch me. You know what I mean?
Oh, damn.
Now, Tristan and I worked at a scout camp and in the summers, and it was a Cub Scout camp. And one of the fun games we would play is how drunk can we be as lifeguards before people start to notice?
life roulette.
The answer is they never noticed.
Even when the waterfront director was sleeping on the hammock 10 feet away.
Years ago, though. Let's put that behind us, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, that's all I want to say is that a good pair of sunglasses can get you through pretty much anything. But
Red Bull.
But now here we are. Sickles' wife is cheating on him, but Philip Barton Key would literally walk out in front of her house, in front of Sickles' own house, and sit on a park bench across the street from the house within view of one of the big windows of their gorgeous house in Lafayette Square here in Washington, D.C., which, by the way, you can't still walk around this area. This is all still right there. And he would wave his handkerchief in the window, and that was the signal. It was the proverbial sock on the doorknob. Of, hey, what are you doing right now?
Right. And, is the coast clear?
Apparently, this would happen. They were so brazen with it and so involved with one another that they would routinely meet up to three times a day. Okay. And let's give credit where credit's due. This is before Viagra.
Right.
Before Cialis. This is just, a hot Italian girl. You know what I mean? Which it does things to you.
I think at this time, too, she's probably about 21, so she's prime.
Finally legal.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's why Sickles lost interest. He's like, there's no thrill anymore. No, well, they won't.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, but he would wave
what does this woman look like?
Oh, yeah, she's a smoke show.
You could tell she's – there's a – Like I said, there's a very good Marissa Tomei quality about her. But
for those who didn't just hear, that was my jaw hitting the fucking floor. Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a dime.
Now things make sense.
Yeah. And she's hot by modern standards, judging her back then as well. It's not like she's pretty for the time or anything. Like, this is just a stunning woman.
Yeah, if she was on Jersey Housewives, she'd be real hot.
Star attraction. McKee would be waving his handkerchief, and then she would return the signal. He would then walk over to, I believe it was 15th, to this house that he rented. And then she would sneak out of Sickle's house and walk over and come into to their rendezvous via the back door of this house on 15th and, start the heeing and sheeing.
There's a backdoor joke.
It
just floated
as I was saying
my
it. It came into my head. Like,
I questioned myself if I should
there's
go.
There's an
there.
Opening. Whoa, there's another one.
Well, usually it's me getting shit for the dirty stuff I say on the show. I like that you finally turned it around. I'm here, LP. I appreciate that. Now that being said, this affair's going on out in the open. Everybody knows, like you were saying, Tristan, except for Sickles. So Sickles is unaware of the cheating until he receives a poison pen letter that
Sickles
reads
Sickles doesn't know. Sickles doesn't know.
Yeah, an anonymous poison pen letter.
Oh, yeah. So it's, in a modern sense, even then, this affair to be carried out in the open, it's like it's still considered a gross thing, even though we're more lackadaisical on moral standards.
Even though people are like, ooh, what's going on? People are still like, what is he doing?
Exactly.
There was no Snapchat, so you can get away with stuff like
no
that.
No Snapchat. Right? Hey, who's Teresa, and why does she want to know if you're up?
And you also got to remember, too, this is the Victorian era, so, just for a woman to be showing her ankle, it's like, oh, man, that's hot stuff. the boundaries were a little more constrained than by today's standards.
You got to figure it's a good 40 minutes to get in and out of the dress and the corset and all the other stuff.
A lot of buttons.
Yeah, so.
Nothing a good pair of scissors can't handle.
Yeah, there's time.
Bodice ripper.
But that being said, this poison pen letter shows up for Mr. Sickles, who receives it while he's at his office in Congress, and he gets a letter, poison pen letter, that includes a phrase that I thought was worth repeating. I assure you, sir, that Mr. Key has as much use for your wife as you do.
Oh.
Wow. Who's getting more?
No wonder it's anonymous.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So now that sets off into an absolute rage our friend Mr. Dan Sickles. He becomes so enraged reading the letter that he has to be calmed down in another room by his friends and coworkers in order to not cause a scene. This guy's already tabloid fodder. People want to know what he's doing. He's a bit of a celebrity in town, but more of an eccentric celebrity. Now, this next part is where we put this boy into the history books forever. Sickles is so enraged that even though he had been a known womanizer and a solicitor of prostitutes, the idea that his
wife— Wait a minute.
Yep. The idea that his wife cheated on him. Well, it was he's sitting there. He's like, oh, well, I can go out there and do that, but I still have my wife and I honor my house and I all that other stuff, blah, blah, blah. And now his wife can't do that. Yeah, his wife can't be doing that. She's dishonored the household. And then it's always a thing, too. It's almost like the opening scene of Romeo and Juliet. There's that goofy line where the Montagues and the Capulets they decide they're going to bite their thumb at the Capulets, and it's an insult if they bear it. So it's not an insult to bite your thumb at somebody, but if they don't correct you on that, now you're sitting there like, well, I took a good slap in the face. What I mean? So that's like, it's not if you give the middle finger to somebody on the parkway, you can go drive away or whatever, and that person has to sit there and be angry for the next hour that they got flipped off. I know, because it's happened.
But, multiple times.
Oh, yeah. You've seen me scream at myself in the car before. It gets a little intense here.
The parkway brings out the worst of people. It's not your fault.
Well, if you can imagine the parkway on steroids, that's the berserker rage that old Dan Sickles is in right now.
Oh, no.
He is losing his shit, all right? Now, what happens here is that he goes home and confronts his wife about the affair. And she breaks down and admits everything. And he actually gets her to write out a confession that is witnessed by two people, all right? They're there for the purpose of being a witness. Huge deal for that one because, this is before the idea of like a prenup and all that other stuff. So you can't really you know, there's a lot of people who'd be like, I was emotionally abused, and which is an insult to people who are actually emotionally abused. You just got caught cheating. You know what I mean? So the thing with her now is that she's broken by this whole thing. She is Dan Sickles takes the wedding ring from her, which shatters her universe. This woman is destroyed now because now she's you've alienated the man that is the father of your children. And then on top of that, he's now taken your wedding ring from you. So now everybody – now that's almost like a scarlet letter in and of itself that it is an insult if you bear it. So now she's ruined out in public. Everybody knows what's going on here. Like, yeah, okay, I was in a cheating relationship, but now it's come to a head. Now everybody knows that I cheated on my husband, and I'm now being punished by my husband. So he's screaming at her, whatever. She winds up sleeping on the floor. You ever sleep on the couch, Tristan?
Yeah.
I'll put it this way. Tristan, have you slept in your bed any time the month of January?
Any time in the past 5 months? No. Tristan sleeps in his daughter's bed with a Peppa Pig blanket and, you know, because my wife and my children take up my whole bed. So it's me and my cat and Peppa Pig. That's right.
Well, yours is just a lack of space. I mean, there's a Tetris vibe going on over there with trying to fit everybody in. But now Teresa has to sleep on the floor while Dan Sickles sleeps in the master bedroom in his own bed. And the servants in the house are they both report hearing crying from both rooms. So where Teresa's sleeping on the floor, she's sobbing. Dan Sickles is sobbing in his room. I mean, this is an emotional thing here for them. It's almost like a thing, too, where you ever been blackout drunk, Tristan, and you say you've never been somewhere before, but then you go in during the day and your phone syncs to the Wi-Fi? You're like, I was here. So that's what kind of they're dealing with right now here. Now, Sickles had already had borderline psychotic about the event, but he was mumbling and screaming to himself about dishonor, 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 dishonor.
Yeah, and it was what's I found interesting too is that there was a little bit of a time lapse to the event that's about to unfold here, in that he called in some of his entrusted buddies, cronies, advisors, whatever, as to how to proceed, because now he's besmirched and disgraced and everything else, and he's only come to know of this. But at the same time, he certainly did go into a rage, but there is a bit of a cooling off period that he's now, well, how do I move forward with this whole thing? So, you know, was this letter written by Teresa a little bit after that, like he's now calculating what his next move is going to be? So
you guys are hyping up something really messed up, aren't you? What happens?
Well, the point is, it's the way the story reads, you think it's just a moment of pure rage, and it's not that it's not a calculated moment of rage, but it's definitely not like all right, I'm going to calm down now. This is boiling point stuff here. You know right. what I mean? So, he's getting more calculated with it. And I do imagine being one of Dan Sickles' friends. And you get the phone call late at night. You got to tell your wife, I got to go. Yeah, you know that thing with Teresa and, you know, Philip Barton Key? Yeah, Dan found out. I got to go. I got shit to do. Sickles now sees
this is the next day now.
Yeah, the next day. So we
daylight.
There is that time. Right? Broad daylight.
Right. Middle
important
of night.
To the story. The next day, Philip Barton Key sits outside on a park bench outside of the window that he would normally signal Teresa from and throws the handkerchief up in the air. He clearly unaware that Dan has found out about the two of them.
He's watching out the window.
Yep. His call went unanswered. And then again later in the day, he tries again until finally a third time he goes back there to try to, you know, greet Teresa, which again, that's a testament to how hot this chick had to be. I mean, when you're sitting there and you're willing to go back three different times, you're like, oh, come on, man. Come on. It's my Tuesday. Come on. We got to do this. Michael Kay's coming on. Anyway, as they're sitting there, they go ahead and they move on to this third time. He's now greeted by the Sickles family dog. Okay? The Sickles family dog.
Yeah, Dan's own dog runs out to greet Key as if he's letting their old buds kind of a thing. So he's not barking at the stranger. He's going out to lick his hand or something, you know?
That goes back to that Wi-Fi thing where you tell your wife, oh, I've never been to this bar before. Look, oh, what a cute little place. And it's like, hey, KP. Right.
Oh, the dog is like, Key, you're the guy that was boffing the lady of the house on the living room couch.
Like in Goodfellas when it was, Thursdays were for girlfriends, Fridays were for wives. that they'd walk into the Copacabana, and then the greeter, the host at the restaurant, would be like, "Oh, we haven't seen you in weeks. How are you?" Yeah. So Sickle sees the man and just goes into a fucking rage. He's fuming, screaming about dishonor, dishonor. Sickles grabs two Derringer pistols, which, just for reference, are two shots each. Okay, little tiny pistols. Very popular in cities and everything like that, because you could be up close and personal in a city. It wasn't quite like the Wild West, where you had to, you know, worry about the Indians coming in on you.
But you could also carry it in your vest pocket or whatever, too, easily concealed.
Handy. Marches out to Key, screaming, "Key, you scoundrel, you must die." Fires the first shot at him. First shot grazes Key, who's panicked now. We're in broad daylight. There's witnesses around.
In Lafayette Square.
In Lafayette. Literally.
Right across from the White House.
Literally, the White House can see what you're doing, okay?
Trump's watching from the
a scuffle breaks out as Key is panicked now and starts begging for his life. A scuffle breaks out, and there's a little bit of if you want to talk about what a pretty boy Philip Barton Key was. He's rumored to have thrown his opera glasses.
Yeah, he threw his glasses at him. Don't shoot me.
So he goes ahead and he throws that at him. The pistol drops. The first Derringer drops. Now the second pistol he picks up and he goes to take another shot here. Catches you. If you want to shoot the man that's bopping your wife.
He pulled the butters on him.
Yeah. went ahead and shot him in the groin.
He shot him in the dick.
Okay. Now, whether it's intended or not is not known, but I do think it's apropos. So goes ahead, shoots them in the groin. Philip Barton Key falls to the ground, goes, "Oh, I've been shot." He can't believe it here. There's witnesses all around. Sickles goes to shoot the next shot now, and the gun jams. These Derringers are not very reliable. So now, Philip Barton Key, bleeding out of his crotch, just trying to get a little tail, trying to sneak in for his afternoon delight with a married woman. And now her husband is calmly standing over him, reloading his Derringer. So you're just sitting there, and you're like, God, it's like a load time for your own death. You know what I mean? A load screen is on. And he's sitting there, takes the Derringer, puts it right up to his chest, pulls the trigger, bam. All right. But it's a Derringer, small caliber bullet, not a big propulsion on that one or anything like that. So it doesn't kill him right away. So he's sitting there. So now he takes the gun, puts it up to his temple, and just like listeners of the show who listen to our Bugs Moran episode, Jaime the Pole and Bugs Moran attempt to perform what is known as the coup de grace, the kill shot, on Johnny Torrio by putting the gun up to his head, and then the gun jams. All right? Same thing happens here. Gun jams again, and Sickles just like, fuck it, throws the thing away, realizes he's killed Philip Barton Key, okay? But Philip Barton Key is still alive. He walks away. And literally in broad daylight, everybody's seeing this shit here, and goes and turns himself in. But he's mumbling the entire time about dishonor, dishonor. And he keeps saying he violated my bed. He violated my bed. Clearly a ranting and raving lunatic, which will become important for the second part of this story.
Sickles, the next chapter.
Yeah,
it's the OJ effect. I don't know if I liked that version of the Harry Potter movie. I don't like this one.
It is interesting, the
second one was better.
But he's walking away and he's, Key is laying on the ground bleeding out. He's already got two shots in him. They cart him off, and Sickles then turns himself in to the local prosecutor. Things are not looking for Key. He later dies. A couple hours later, Key dies. So now...
So he did kill him.
Yeah. And then... He absolutely did kill him. Meanwhile, there's a White House page by the name of Barrett's from North Carolina who happened to be walking by at the time, and he witnessed the entire thing, witnessed the shooting. So being a White House page, what are you going to do? You're going to immediately run back with this latest news and tell your boss, the president, James Buchanan, what just transpired.
Hey, boss, if I saw someone shoot someone in the street and they both work for you,
yeah,
you want to know about that, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, hey, boss, Dan Sickles, you know, your right-hand man, the guy that's like – one of the second most powerful guys in all of Washington under your tutelage, if you will, or under your umbrella. Mm-hmm. He just killed Key.
Right outside. Right, well, where did he kill
right
Key?
Right across the street. Right across the Lafayette street. Park. And Buchanan immediately reaches into his pocket and pulls out money and tells this guy, get out of here. Get out of town before before the authorities show up and call you in as a witness, kind of a thing. That you know, you got a presidential cover up, big time. That's
really?
Being funded by the president to tell this witness to make yourself scarce.
Oh, you've been working so hard lately. You just take a little bit of money. Why don't you get out of town for a little bit? You know, you're seeing things. But he's completely unaware, by the way.
Holy crap!
In Buchanan's bribing of this guy here, in that presidential cover up. He's unaware that this shit went down in broad daylight. Everybody knows what's going on here, man. You can't lie about something that everybody saw.
Plus, the whole town already knew that the wife was in delicti there with Mr. Key. So it was like, you know, when is Dan going to find out? Well, Dan found out and went into a rage and didn't end well for Mr. Key.
So there's a presidential cover-up for someone who has campaigned on his behalf. And the Sickles house, by the way, was I mean, if you were well-to-do in society and you were plugged into things – you'd get invited over to the Sickles house all the time.
Yeah, they were known for the party house. They always had the most grandeur social affairs at the Sickles house.
Yeah, not to keep going back to the Sopranos too, but I do think that there's a Jeannie Cusimano effect for Audie. Now Sickles, for his part, owned what he did. He literally turned himself in, and he walked into his wife, and his first words to her after the shooting were simply, "I've killed him." So now she's sitting there. Now her lover is now dead because her husband, you know, found out about it and shot the guy. I mean, that's got to be a weird feeling going on over there, man. She can't be settled in on anything because, A, you're terrified, but also you're like, man, this guy really loves me.
Yeah, and I just wrote the whole confession to having the affair last night when you made me sleep on the floor and we're in separate rooms and everything else. So, yeah, she's... She's not doing too well right now.
One way to avoid the awkward conversation of having to see Philip again after you know, the confession to the affair is the fact that your husband just shot him.
Yeah.
So you got that going on here. Now we got to start speeding up a little bit because this is, like I said, Sickles' life happens in chapters, and this is just the most interesting chapter of the early stuff.
Oh, is this the movie where we skip like 20 years into the future, see where he's up to?
You won't recognize this guy by the end of the story. Sickles' trial is about to become as famous as the incident here himself. Sickles had a crack team of 8 of the country's finest lawyers, including several Tammany men. Because when you're Tammany for life, baby.
Right. Right. So, you got to protect your own.
It's the trial of the century.
Got to protect your investment.
It was. The trial did excellent on that one here as well, man. It's now Philip Barton Key was the district attorney. So if you want to make sure that you have an easy case and the guy you're going up against is the district attorney, why not shoot him and then have the case be him trying to defend himself? So now his replacement was his second in command. What's the guy's name, Dad?
That sounds like a hell of a Law and Order episode.
It was. There's
Robert
a lot of dun-dun.
Robert Old was the prosecutor.
And clearly outmatched. 8 of the finest lawyers in the country come together here.
Now, and the leading lawyer out of that team of 8 was a guy by the name of Edwin M. Stanton, who's a close friend both of Sickles and the president. So Buchanan definitely has got a hand in who he's picking on this. And Stanton was appointed the very next year as Attorney General of the United States. So, you know, he was rewarded for a job well done in the defense of Mr. Sickles.
Well, imagine I've got Tristan's back no matter what. We've been friends way too long for that stuff. But
you guys have too much dirt on one another.
Well, that part's good too. That ensures silence.
That's right.
But that being said, it's got to be a tough assignment to defend the man who openly admits to shooting the other guy. But
Kardashian.
Yeah. It's an interesting gig, though, isn't it? So now Sickles is fascinating here because they decide that they're going to go ahead and they're framing the argument a certain way for him in what's going to become a very famous thing. But it's important to note that public support is largely behind Sickles for this thing. That literally one of the things that they were saying is, oh, thank God he has saved all the other wives of D.C. from the flirtatious Philip Barton Key. Nobody really liked this guy. You know what I mean? He's a pretty boy. The women swoon over him. It's kind of like it's like my buddy Nate. Everybody used to hate him because girls responded to him very well, and he never understood why. He goes, I don't understand. Everybody just hates me. All I do is I just take their girlfriends from them, and all of a sudden I'm an asshole.
You're sending the link to him too?
Nah, he listens already actually, which I enjoy. Now, Sickles' defense here is the public support is largely behind him. His crack team of lawyers, the first use in American history of the temporary insanity.
Get the hell out of here. No freaking way.
Our boy Dan Sickles is the first case, my friend. And they go ahead and they talk about that the cheating and the infidelity has caused this irresistible impulse to defend his honor and a transport of frenzy, which resulted in the killing, the passion honor killing of Philip Barton Key by Dan Sickles. So Sickles is now acquitted of the murder. So his defense worked. It worked. They said temporary insanity, and it worked. Of course they're going to try it again.
The Chewbacca defense.
Yeah. Yeah, public opinion was definitely with Sickles. I mean, everybody was cheering for this guy. After all, he was defending the honor of his household and his name, even though he's the biggest freaking whoremonger in all of the United States probably at this point, that, you know, it was good for the goose but not for the gander kind of a thing, that he's got to defend his honor and his family's honor.
Well, your boy Stan now that you're talking about, his lead attorney, literally dances a jig in the courtroom when they get him acquitted.
Right.
Now imagine being Philip Barton Key's family and you're just like, all right, this is a bit much, guys, all right? This is an insult here. Philip was a good man. Yes, he was yes, he was involved with women who were married, and he, you know, flirted where he probably shouldn't have. Maybe he deserved what he got, but I don't need you guys dancing in the courtroom when his murderer is going free. Hey, are you guys? Is there a parade going on outside?
Yes, there was.
There was a parade going on.
There was. There's a parade in the streets when the acquittal was announced.
The U.S. Marine Corps band played in the parade celebrating the acquittal of Dan Sickles murdering in broad daylight under the defense of temporary insanity. Philip Barton Key, the son of the man who wrote the Star Spangled Banner. All right, you can't get away with, but it worked. It worked.
Absolutely.
Public support is all sorts of behind Sickles here. They absolutely love him. It's a hero. It's a man to be not admired, but a man to be celebrated. And then public opinion turns on him very quickly. The crowd is fickle, Kahuna. The crowd is fickle. He forgives his wife, and everybody turns on him. They can't believe
the weak character later.
Teresa is now back. I mean, again, that's got to be a statement to how hot this chick was.
He takes her back.
Yep. Takes her back, gives her the wedding ring back and everything. She's now fully back in his household, if you will, in terms of esteem as well.
You guys have just gave me the greatest inspiration for a Law & Order spec script. I am so happy right now. I'm getting work this year, and it's all because of y'all.
It's a passion crime here, too, which is ripe for the Law & Order stuff.
But that's like the halfway point.
Yep.
Are you serious? We're only 50% of the way through?
Public opinion, though. Once he forgives Teresa for her indiscretions, never mind all the indiscretions that he had, but he takes her back, and public opinion is like, wait a minute. She's the one that dishonored you, and now you're taking her back. And that public opinion took a huge downturn with that everybody was against Sickles now. And this is only, a short time later, a few months later.
Oh, yeah. You were the topic du jour for a minute, and everybody loved you. And then it ended. Now his return to a quiet life doesn't quite last either.
Dan's not a quiet guy.
No.
How old is he at this point?
I don't know, but I will say this. He lives to the ripe old age of 94.
Get the hell out of here. No way.
Which is 94 is good for 2019 standards. Okay.
What was it, his 1800s?
This is the Civil War era.
He died, what was it, like 1914, I believe, or something like that?
I got the date for the bookend on this one here, but like we said, it happens in chapters.
He got to see the Titanic sink.
Well, as Tristan also said, too, this is his story. Now, this temporary insanity thing, that's a movie in and of itself.
Yeah.
The second movie would be Dan Sickles, Civil War Hero. All right? The outbreak of the Civil War offers a new opportunity to expand his fortune and then also probably return his name to a hero status.
So this guy's funeral must have been all over the place. People were like...
Oh, it was huge.
No.
Are you serious?
His funeral? Yeah.
But don't tell me there's an interesting story there, too.
There's all kinds of
fun facts
in between Shoot and Key and his actual...
Also, the interesting facts are the spinoff movies in this fucking saga of this
guy. Like we said, if whoever you were, whether you loved him or you hated him, if you had an opinion on Dan Sickles, it was going to be a strong one and an impassioned one because he brought out... He was a charismatic guy, man. Because of that, he's actually very good at recruiting. So if you could raise troops up, you could become the leader of the troops, and then you could be heroically leading men into battle and you know, regaining some of that hero status that he had lost by taking his wife Teresa back. And I don't think he wanted to be known as the temporary insanity guy his entire life. I think he wanted to he was an ambitious fella. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the next election, he's reelected by the Tammany Democrats. And at the time, the Tammany Democrats really supported the South. So, I mean, Sickles from New York. New York had a huge financial interest in supporting Southern interests with the cotton and the manufacture of goods and everything else. But
Fernando Wood of Tammany Hall, the first Tammany mayor, wanted New York to be a free city so they continue to do business with the South.
Yeah, and then once the South fired on Fort Sumter, which was the start of the Civil War, things made another turn. Somebody else's bad turned into Sickles' good type of thing, that he was able to spin things around by somebody else's calamity.
Well, also, when the South leaves, it takes with it some of the finest generals, a lot of the military men, the Truman. So now, a lawyer from New York City with a little bit of a limited background in the military, who is still most famous for shooting a guy in the street. You think he's good at, you know, with a derringer.
Shooting the guy in the street in the balls.
Wait till you see what he does with a howitzer.
Yeah.
So they go ahead and he winds up becoming the lead of the Excelsior Brigade of Excelsior. New York City. Excelsior.
Yeah, but he was also a millionaire, though. Like, he raised not only, like, I forget which one's smaller, not a brigade, but a whole battalion.
He winds up becoming the leader of the Third Corps later on
eventually,
in the story.
Eventually, yeah, but initially, with South Carolina, you know, firing on Fort Sumter and the start of the Civil War, now Lincoln is the president, and he's in need of troops, like, immediately. So Lincoln calls for 75,000 people to sign up to help defend the Union and all this kind of stuff. New York is probably one of the largest areas, populations in the Union, and Dan Sickles has still got all these Tammany Hall tie-ins. So he's able to go back to New York and start raising troops. So he quits the Congress, goes back to New York, tries to raise troops, comes up with a whole brigade, which is a lot of guys.
He's a quality recruiter, too, because he was a big personality.
So yeah.
And he was so enthusiastic about the patriotic effort of preserving the Union that now a guy who was a Buchanan guy and a Pierce guy is now getting praised on his patriotism by Abraham Lincoln. All right? So not bad. If you want to talk about reaching across the aisle here. now, that being said, LP, you got something to Tristan, read that for us real quick.
It is the chart above represents a typical late war Union army structure. So it's a regiment, a brigade, a division, a corps, and the entire army. So yeah, he eventually they wanted him to eventually give them a regiment, but he came up with a whole brigade.
Right. Actually, he was so successful. Now, again, politically, the governor of New York is a Republican. Sickles is a Democrat. New York City is primarily Democratic, but the rest of New York is Republican. So now you got a Republican governor trying to raise troops for Mr. Lincoln, but a Democrat is more successful at that than the rest of the state. I mean, he overextended what he really wanted to do, that the Republican governor is now like, oh, wait a minute, you better slow this down because, you know, the rest of upstate New York is – don't want to be associated, especially with the dirty Irish of New York City, which was the predominant.
Which, for the record, the Irish in 2019 still dirty. but no, that's an excellent point too. Here now, Sickles goes ahead and he is now in charge of this. Loosely, it took a while to get him affirmed in command, if you will, because people again had these very strong opinions about him. Now we got to keep moving forward here, just for the sake of brevity on the show, but. Sickles missed several early battles of the war because of his ability to, A, not be confirmed as the standalone leader of the Excelsior Brigade. And also, he was so good at recruiting. Why are we going to waste this guy's talent on the battlefield where he's just a fucking lawyer when we could actually have him in there, you know, sounding the song, if you will, and getting everybody involved with the war here? So now Sickles becomes a close friend and ally to Major General Joseph Hooker,
TJ.
Yeah, hooker. That hooker. No, not TJ.
This guy in hookers, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
You said something about hookers. No, no, you're working for the
hooker. General hooker. Not that, hookers in general.
It's that Dilbert bit you were talking about earlier.
Neil, please. Yeah. So now, hooker, this is hilarious, too. Hooker and Sickles' army tents, while they were out in battle, if you will, not necessarily in battle, but encampment for battle, more closely resembles a bordello than a military effort. A lot of whores and everything like that coming in, prostitutes, boozing. I mean, these guys were, wherever they go, the party went with them. All right?
Yeah, Hooker was noted for having his camp followers, the ladies' brigade, if you will, who take care of the soldiers' needs.
I like to envision they're all dressed as Rosie the Riveter.
not quite.
Hooker eventually made Sickles the Corps commander of the Third Corps, like Tristan was saying here, which made Sickles the only man without a West Point education in charge of that number of troops. Sickles had requested and argued for a different allocation of troops and positions during what would become Hooker's greatest defeat in battle at Chancellorsville, which is a Union. I mean, if you read about Hooker, they say, pretty solid general, except for Chancellorsville. Holy shit, did he fuck up at Chancellorsville. It is considered an absolute Union disgrace, and ultimately the last victory of Confederate legend Stonewall Jackson, who pretty much caught them literally with their pants down and just delivered an ass whooping.
Yeah, that was a brilliant military move. Now, early on in the Civil War, the Union was getting the shit kicked out of them because they had incompetent general after incompetent general, and the history of one and done, that you'd have the new guy that's in charge in the entire army, he would fight his first major battle, lose it, and then they would go on to a new general. So at Chancellorsville,
it's almost like the Jets versus the Giants coaching job, is that the Giants will keep, stick with their guy. Robert E. Lee was going to be in for a long time here, and then you probably kept him a little bit too long towards the end where Tom Coughlin had to go to Jacksonville.
Right.
But the Jets would just fire. And so hopefully, literally as we're recording this, the Jets have just announced a new head coach as well. So we'll see what Mr. Gase does for the old gang green. But like you said, man, they move on a pretty – they're changing who's in command quite often here. And Dan Sickles is held out of some of the early battles here. Finally, yeah. Gets his shot.
Yeah, well, Hooker gets promoted to be in charge of the entire army, not just his corps. And when Hooker gets promoted to the entire army, Mr. Sickles comes up and now is in charge of the Third Corps. So he gets promoted or dragged along. At this particular point in time, the whole army is divided into various corps. Every one of the corps is being led by a professional soldier or a West Point graduate, except for Mr. Dan Sickles in the Third Corps. He's the only guy that's a political appointee, if you will. And the reason why he is in that position is simply because of the great job that he did in recruitment. It was given to him begrudgingly, and his appointment was given begrudgingly by Congress, or to be acknowledged by Congress. But now it's at Chancellorsville. Hooker is finally one of the Union generals that's going on the attack rather than a defensive kind of a thing, a hold and wait and, we're not ready yet. Hooker finally goes on the attack, but then like halfway through starts to go on a defensive thing. And
playing Sickles, neutral zone defense.
Right. Sickles is very much involved with the loss at Chancellorsville, which leads to Hooker being removed from command. So there's a loss at Chancellorsville where Sickles was ordered to give up the high ground. He went out to attack what he thought was the Confederates retreating. Turns out it was Stonewall Jackson's end-around move that Sickles misread it. They weren't retreating. They were trying to attack what was the Union's right flank and completely overran the right flank. A guy by the name of Howard was in charge of that right flank, and
so they
just got overrun.
So they flea flicker because they think they're protecting against the run, and then all of a sudden they throw it all back to Eli, who's sending it downfield.
There you go. So now Chancellorsville is over. It comes back in a big disgrace. The Union loses once again, and now we're off. Now that's in May, right? May of 1863. And now they're going off, and then Robert E. Lee, old Bobby Lee, now takes the fight into the north and heads towards a little town in Pennsylvania called Gettysburg. I'll let you take it from there, Kev.
No, I hear you. And again, this is we're keeping Mr. Sickles here to a one solid episode, and because of that, we have to move forward here. But I think Dan Sickles would be okay with it.
You're talking about Dan? You're talking about me? Yeah, I'm good with that. Go ahead.
So Dan Sickles, now he finally gets the battle he desires over here at this little town of Gettysburg. Sickles disobeys the direct orders of General George Meade by moving his troops forward past Cemetery Ridge and into the peach orchard, more than a mile out of his ordered position.
No, okay. Not just about a mile.
Yeah, it's important that you noted that.
Yeah, just trying to be giving you some a fact check for it, Kevin.
No, I hear you. So he goes ahead. Nonetheless, don't fucking disobey the general's orders, and then don't do it so blatantly that you can. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said. Not, you know, mile marker 142. That's great.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So you missed an entire exit on the parkway. Yeah. So now goes ahead. He's moved his men too far forward, and he can't order them back in time because the Confederates are already moving in to attack him. He moved himself far forward because he was in a depression, not a mood depression, but where he was, he thought his men were going to be shooting uphill. And because of what you were saying earlier, Chancellorsville, because of the ground that was lost by Hooker, he wanted to make sure that his men weren't shooting uphill in that little depression, if you will. So he goes ahead and moves his men forward to more favorable ground.
Oh, and he thought it was going to be favorable ground.
But. And the result is the absolute destruction of the Third Corps.
He broke the line.
Right. Now, if it wasn't for a guy named Gouverneur Kimball Warren, they would have realized that Little Round Top was completely left in the open here, which is the Swinging Gate movement. So those who have seen the movie Gettysburg – we'll know that that was where Chamberlain in the 20th Maine, I believe.
Yes.
20th Maine. That's where they had that legendary charge moment of the swinging gate defense. Sickles goes ahead and moves his men forward, and it's too late, guys. Sorry, we can't, you know, right. We can't bring you back now. Just hang out. It'll be okay.
Had he stayed where he was, they would have had a tough time of it, no doubt, once the Confederates did attack. But the distance within that line, within that federal line, would have been a whole lot shorter. By him moving forward, now he's stretching his men even thinner than what he was originally positioned or supposed to be. And they couldn't connect to the left or to the right. So now you got this Third Corps out in the middle of nowhere. And now they can be attacked from two different sides, kind of a thing. And they got overrun.
Gets the ever-loving shit kicked out of them, Tristan.
That too.
They get the ever-loving shit kicked out of them. The complete destruction of the Third Corps, over 4,000 casualties. That means dead, wounded, and missing.
Yeah. So you're going in with 10,000 guys, and you're coming away with 4,000 of those guys not fit for service to answer the call. So 40% casualty rate, that's not good.
I like to picture Dan Sickles standing there saying, oh, how could this day get any worse?
Well, it does.
And then he gets hit with a 20-pound fucking cannonball to the leg.
One in a million shot. One in a million shot. I was listening about this on the way here. He was describing it in one of his journals. He felt down. He was never dehorsed. This was a cannon shot. He was never dehorsed. Felt down. Felt blood. Felt something warm. Realized it was blood, and then slinked off his horse.
Right. Jesus, there was a leg there a minute ago.
Who the freak that leg?
Wait,
go?
And he was on a horse.
He was on a horse.
Yeah, he was mounted on a horse.
And the horse The horse walked away unscathed.
But it took his leg off, shattered his leg.
It's almost like when I think it was Randy Johnson threw that fastball that you just saw a puff of feathers.
the bird
flew in. It just happened to be that perfect timing for everything. And so, like you said, million to one shot here. I did not know about the horse, by the way. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
But Sickles gets that 20-pound cannonball to the leg. His leg's absolutely mangled, and he's getting taken off the field of battle here. Not a good feeling for when you got your
commander.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy that's supposed to be taking care of you here, and he's getting taken off via a gurney. So in order to keep his troops calm and show that all is not lost, he lights a cigar because he's Dan Sickles.
In my head, I was literally like, he's Dan Sickles. He has to get off the battlefield in a boss kind of way.
Something
in my head clicked. Like, he was definitely smoking a cigar, and then the minute you said it, I was just like,
Yes.
Pops a cigar.
It's a Monty Python. It's just a flesh wound. Yeah. And
the key here as well is that by his men seeing the cigar smoke coming out of Sickles, they're like, okay, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe he's going to be okay here. So that actually alleviates some of the concern of his men that are left over. They're still dealing with a shit day. Don't get it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the bloodiest fighting of the entire battle.
I'm going to lie. It is oddly calming. Like, it's weird.
Now,
it was probably one of the most furious battles of the entire Civil War as far as cannon fire is concerned, too, because that particular area on the Peachfield, I mean, cannonballs are whizzing in. Gettysburg.
Oh, this – okay.
But we're in the Peach
John
Field.
John August is going to have a field day with you.
Yeah. And there was also another section called the Wheat Field. And the Wheat Field was like maybe 18 acres. And the battle went back and forth over 2 or 3 hours where I think there was like 6,000 dead in the Wheat Field.
Did you say it was –
the ebb and flow went back and forth 6 times. That by estimates that at the end of the day, you could not walk across the wheat field without stepping on somebody.
Well,
so Mr. Sickles retired early. It was fast and furious, yeah.
Mr. Sickles retired early from this one now. Sometimes I can be a calm guy. Kahuna, we're talking about Sickles doing it in a boss way. You find out you're about to lose your leg because you got a very complicated wound that needs to be turned into a very simple wound. So they amputate his leg in order to avert having to deal with the tiny small amounts of surgery that would have to be required with caveman tools.
They didn't have that technology.
This is 1800 surgery. Mm,
right.
Like,
literally, you're
going to be
saw
in pain for the rest of your life.
This is when you get the whiskey and the saw and the bit to bite down on.
Absolutely.
Oddly, Sickles is sitting there, cigar in hand, calmly drinking wine as he has his leg amputated. All right, so they go ahead and they he probably screamed a little bit, let's be honest.
Yeah.
All right. But they go ahead and they chop off his leg. And now that wound on his leg, rather, he takes the leg and keeps it because he's Dan Sickles and nothing makes sense. Keeps the leg, has it preserved in whiskey, okay? The leg is later sent via a coffin-like box, a little tiny, like almost like a like an American girl
its
doll would come
right.
out of
right.
Sent the box to the Army Medical Hospital.
The museum.
Which would later be turned into the National Medical Museum, correct? With an inscription reading, "Compliments of Major Dan Sickles." So,
and it's his freaking leg.
It's his freaking leg.
Well, I think it was DES. It was his
DES. He went
DES,
by which is funny
I'm morbidly curious. Is it still around?
Yes.
Yes, you can still go see. Actually, what's funny is I learned about this on the way up here. He would go and visit the leg. And he would bring his friends with him. So like, oh, well, there's old righty. Guys, there she is.
You know, you guys want to go to a museum? Sure. Right. They walk to his part. They're like, oh, my God, what the fuck is that? That's my leg, motherfuckers.
He would bring friends to visit the leg.
I'm so dope, my leg is in a museum.
It's a bizarro world version of the Christmas story lamp.
There you go. That's a major award.
Only because we were talking about them earlier.
It's French.
Matt Stone, Trey Parker, get on this biopic.
So, Sickle, we're not even now we got a couple footnotes here we have to hit on our way out for the show, but that is the big ticket item here of what fascinated me with Sickles is that he was a buffoon in terms of moving his men forward that way. Led to a lot of their casualties, but you lose a leg, it's hard to come down on somebody when they just lost their leg.
Right.
So now the narrative's
anybody else would have been court-martialed by moving his troops forward. Not only did he move his troops forward out of position where he was told to go, but he never let anybody else know in higher command as to where he was going kind of a thing. He just did all of this on his own. But as it turns out, because you know you get your leg shot off, he's already paid a pretty serious price. He was not court-martialed because of the leg wound.
And some historians argue, as we talked about on the ride down ourselves, that because of him moving his men forward that way, it actually messed with how the Confederates were responding to him because they weren't prepared to see a man that far ahead of the rest of the line.
Right.
So you're like, what the hell's going on over here, man? This kind of – so because of that, they actually the historians still to this day debate whether or not Sickles was actually creating an advantage for later on in the battle.
There's some experts. I mean, Gettysburg is the most studied battle mm-hmm. in all of American history type of thing of what went on with Gettysburg.
International acclaim as well.
Our little podcast here is not going to bring any new light to the Battle of Gettysburg. But what was interesting is that
– way to shit on the product.
There's some experts that think that because he did move his troops out forward, the Confederates came upon them long before they anticipated hitting the federal lines. So some people say that – you know, he screwed up, definitely screwed up. But because he screwed up, it probably saved the day for the Union on the second day battle of Gettysburg.
He's got a little visitor, too, that comes by to see him as his leg's been removed. Abraham Lincoln comes by to see what's going on over here. Brings Tad with him, too. So, you know, you're not in the doghouse anymore when the president and his son come in to check in on you and praise your heroism.
And they were friends back before the Civil War when he was, you know, in the midst of shooting Key and everything else back in the days of early Washington days that he was invited. He and his wife, Teresa, were invited to seances with Mary Todd Lincoln. And, you know, so that they had more than
after the war,
a passing acquaintance. Yeah. Well, Mary Todd got involved with the death of the child and everything else. So, I mean, she was into the spirituality of all of that and the occult or whatever you want to call it long before Mr. Lincoln took one in the head. But that's another story.
You were going to say, T?
Yeah, I thought I also heard that when Abraham Lincoln came to see him after the battle, Sickles actually tried to take credit for winning Gettysburg.
Yep. Oh, yeah. he definitely spun that big time that – the only reason we were able to win at Gettysburg is because of what I did. But again, there's
arguments back and forth. He's got a couple of good quotes later on here. Now, because of his friendship with Abraham Lincoln, he is guaranteed a position in the government in post-war America, which is you go off to war and then you come back, and one of the biggest problems that the troops are having is that you can't go back to your job because it wasn't a protected status at that point. When I got activated and was sent over to the Middle East, I actually got to leave my job with a guarantee of being offered the same rate and the same position when I came back. And it's a legal thing now. Because the reason why they were doing that is because one of the things for the veterans was you couldn't get your position. So this guy's now locked up. You lose your leg, all right? And you've now locked up a guaranteed cushy government job when you go back home to your hot wife. All right?
Not to mention you killed a guy in cold blood in the middle of broad daylight.
Yeah, you've gotten away with it.
He's gotten away with it.
Everything is just coming up sickles.
Is he still with this with Teresa at this point?
Well, Teresa dies at age 31. I forget what it was. It was an illness of some sort. But by all accounts, he had truly mended the fence with his wife here. Still went on to his whoring ways. But
Might have been tuberculosis, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
I think it was TB.
I didn't want to speak tell tales out of school here on that one, but I think you are right with tuberculosis. Thank God it wasn't VD, right? now he sends his leg off to the hospital here. Lincoln visits him, and he's not allowed to return to a combat post under protest. Sickles wanted to go back into the fighting on the war here, right. But Grant would not allow it.
There were other guys that have lost limbs and still went on to fight. I mean, Kearney was one of them. He was a one-armed leader, but Dan was not allowed to go back without both legs.
I do.
Even if one's in the museum.
Come on, boss, I could still do it. Well,
that's right.
It's just a flesh wound.
He wasn't an ass kicker anymore.
That's right. One-legged man in an ass kicking contest.
That might have been the joke of the episode right there, too. Now, post-war, he finds himself – you want to talk about a great fucking gig. All right. We're now into Reconstruction era in the South. Now, we have listeners in the Carolinas, beautiful, beautiful states down there. I've enjoyed my time in South and North Carolina. We only got about 10, 15 minutes left here on this one. But the point is this guy's life continues to happen in chapters. He is made the essential governor of the Carolinas, not North or South, both.
Both.
All right? And he's almost the grand poobah down there. That's his own words to describe me, that he was a Roman emperor of sorts. If you need something, you had to go see Sickles, all right? Now, he's down there, I guarantee you, for a New York guy with an Italian wife, an Italian look-away wife, and then all the prostitutes and everything like that he enjoyed. Now you're in the South. Now it's those nice girls that ask how you're doing, all right? And he's sitting down there, and he's pretty much the guy who can get things done down there. Essentially, he is the emperor of the Carolinas, okay? That's the gig that he has over here, which is fascinating. And like we said, refers to himself as a poobah, And I mean, it just has to be a good life down there. You're in complete control of everything. Imagine having Myrtle Beach to yourself, all right? Almost like a Chris Christie on the beach during a government shutdown. But he goes ahead and he's got that gig for a while here. Sickles' wife, Teresa, dies at age 31, and Sickles winds up remarrying while serving as an ambassador to Spain. Okay, that's his next gig.
Yeah, now he's over in Europe and Spain.
So, yeah, I guess I'll be in charge of the Carolinas, whatever. It's getting kind of boring, you know what I mean? They don't have a football team yet. So I'm going to go ahead and I guess I'll be the ambassador. But literally, the title he gives himself while he's over there is he talks about his time in Spain. As he referred to himself as the Yankee King of Spain. All right? So now he's over there. He marries Carmina Creche, okay, who is a handmaiden of Queen Isabella of Spain. Okay? So he's now banging, you know, if he is the right hand of Buchanan back in the day, he's not the president, but he's well plugged in. This woman is now also well plugged into Queen Isabella of Spain. And he's the Yankee King of Spain. So you guarantee he's doing pretty well for himself over there. Nobody gets pussy like wounded vets get pussy, okay? I had a friend of mine I want to pay a tribute to him real quick. He's since passed away, but my friend Travis Bates had lost his leg. He was a veteran. Lost his leg to cancer, actually. And he passed away a couple years ago, but he was one of the great one-liner comics I ever knew. And he would go out on stage. He'd hobble out on his crutches, and he'd walk out, and the whole room can see that he's missing a leg. And his opening joke was, a lot of you guys are looking at me funny, like I have some sort of disadvantage. But wouldn't you like to know that your dick is longer than your right leg? That was my friend Travis Bates.
Pour one out for the homie.
Was a funny dude.
They called Dan Senor Una Pierna, which is Mr. One Leg. That was his handle over in Madrid.
Not bad on that.
That reminds me of when my dad was sick later in his life. He dressed up for Halloween as a one-legged pirate because he had lost one of his legs.
Oh, wow.
And he walked around with a peg. Not walked around, but he wheeled around with a peg leg. And
oh, Jesus. Gallows humor, fellas.
Oh, my God.
Now, when you are the Yankee King of Spain here, he got in a little bit of shit with Carmina Creche, who he had kids with, by the way.
Two, I believe.
And got a little bit of an incident over here. I don't know how to unpack this in an interesting way that's going to be more interesting than the act of itself. Dan Sickles, Major Devil Dan Sickles, the man who shot his wife's lover out in the streets, who lost a leg in the Battle of Gettysburg, the Grand Poobah of the Carolinas, the Yankee King of Spain, he fucks Queen Isabella.
Well, technically, she wasn't queen at the time.
She was deposed. Hey, royalty is royalty.
That's right.
Right?
Once a queen, always a queen.
Yeah, so
he's banging it.
And he's sitting there, and I mean, he's involved with that, almost carrying it out in the open to the point of where his wife, Carmina, she goes ahead and decides she's not going to come back to the United States with Dan. So for 30 years, they separate.
Yeah, she's not putting up with his antics.
Nope. It's well, have you ever seen a Spanish woman get angry? Well, they're doing things.
Hi, Mom.
She's not carrying a derringer in her pocket.
The chonklo or the broom come out and everybody scatters.
His international incident over here is he starts writing these emotional letters back as the ambassador of sorts from Spain to America and is advocating for war with them. He's often emotional and not factually correct. He's just trying to pick a fight over here. And, I mean, again, that's Spanish girls for you, man. They drive you crazy in a good way. But goes ahead and these letters have to be deciphered and then countered against. Then America's like, hey, it's not quite – what Sickles is saying isn't really what's going on over here in Spain. Let's not go to war with them just yet. As we all know, we eventually do wind up going to war with Spain, but under a little bit better circumstances, not these hyperbolic letters from Dan Sickles. Now, Sickles, his womanizing, his antics continue to both plague and endear him to people. He does have to return to the United States alone. His wife and children refuse to join him. In his later political career, Sickles becomes a champion of battlefield preservation and monuments, a little bit of a self-serving favor, you know what I mean? Hey, you know what would be great? If we built a park to tell everybody how great I was. That's right. You remember how great I am?
Yeah, and this is it was 34 years worth of coercing various congressmen and everything else, but finally now 34 years after the fact, he's given the Medal of Honor. Whether it was political maneuvering or what have you, but eventually he makes that happen too. That he is now a Medal of Honor winner for his antics in
Gettysburg. And his citation too. This one cracks me up here. We've fucked up, all right? Everybody here has fucked up at one point or another. Could you imagine getting the Medal of Honor for fucking up?
That's right.
All right, because that says right. For glorious bravery and he didn't want to leave his men on the field of battle. Hence the cigar thing. So it's like, hey, man, you fucked up. Here's literally, the highest honor the country can give you. Thanks for fucking up, Dan. I appreciate it. You did us a solid here.
Yeah.
I went just to note, I was looking his name up on Google and I typed it in with Queen Isabella. The first thing that comes up is a New York Times article that is titled Tan Sickles, the man who got away with everything.
that's a pretty good article right there. Now to hit the final parts of his life here, because I know we're going long as always. We always say we're not going to bullshit, and then we just bullshit. But
it's okay with this podcast. I'm not going to be like, man, they went over time. No, I love this. I love listening to this show.
And I love having you on it too, man. I would feel bad for whatever podcast you do charge the overtime for. Hey, by the way, talking Jersey. Yeah, you're at 55, all right? Wrap it the fuck up, Dino.
only with podcasts I don't like.
I can definitely see my wife tapping her foot like, I got to go get my nails done. Where is he?
We will get you out of here, T. So, but that being said, he becomes a champion of memorializing the Battle of Gettysburg. And like I said, Gettysburg is Disney World for the Civil War. I mean, it's mind-blowing the amount of it's really not that big of a
property.
What a
way to put it, Disney World for the Civil War.
Oh, it really is.
The happiest place on earth.
Dioramas, cycloramas, all sorts of monuments and everything.
The picture of his leg is horrifying.
It exploded.
Oh my God. Like, I can't imagine not reacting to that sort of injury.
It's very Jason Pierre Paul-esque for the firework incident. But as we were saying here, man, he actually there's $27,000 that is put aside, that is raised in order for Dan Sickles to have a monument made to himself in the park. Okay. Now, every right. major general is, to be every, fair here. Right.
Go ahead.
My father is the integrity of the show. every
that's,
major general.
That's scary in itself right there.
Every major general that was involved in the Battle of Gettysburg does have a monument to themselves here, except for Dan Sickles. He's the only guy without one. Now, it's interesting because the money that was raised in order to make the monument to Sickles was $27,000 that is rumored to have been embezzled and stolen by Sickles himself.
it's the modern-day GoFundMe page.
Yeah. It's the kind of I'll take the cash.
Yeah, picture Fanny White, the world's most famous prostitute, walking out of his house, right? And you're saying like, hey, Dan, do you have that money for the monument thing? I don't know where it went, but Fanny definitely didn't just leave with it.
Yeah. So. At the same time, though, Sickles was very instrumental in the creation of the Gettysburg Military Park to begin with. So
I'm opening a GoFundMe. He's getting a fucking statue.
Yeah, really.
He needs a nice bust up there.
Well, not for nothing, too. I forgot to mention this earlier. You want to talk about Fanny White for a second. You've heard about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, but Fanny White cost you the most money.
Here's my pitch for his statue. It's him being carried off of the battlefield, cigar in hand, Snowy. On his back with his leg like...
Yeah, looking like Dean Martin with the bow tie undone.
Yeah. Either that or he's doing to Captain Morgan.
That's not bad. Not bad, T. Like we said here, man, he's got he like you were mentioning earlier, Tristan, he routinely has people come visit his leg, like, let's set up a poker table underneath my leg.
All right. Going we'll on a field trip there. Today. We're going to go visit my leg.
It's, we'll bring a couple of beers. We'll eventually – I imagine right now that if Ming is hearing this, Ming, please – you have all this cool shit up in the studio here in a shared universe. How do we get Dan Sickles' leg in this fucking studio? But Now, this is the greatest line I have ever heard. This is a line we're going to go out on for this one here. LP, do you have anything else before we hit the line about why there's no memorial to Dan Sickles at Gettysburg?
I think we got it here, Kev.
Well, his leg is still on display here, we're going to go out on this one. So that being said, I'm going to say the goodbyes here real quickly. I want to say thank you to Mike and Ming over at Shared Universe letting us do this one. Thank you to the Kahuna behind the one and twos. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you, Tristan Reinagera, one of my oldest and closest friends. Thank you for coming down to the show. Thanks for listening to the show, too, buddy.
No, thanks for having me, finally. Hopefully this is not a one-time thing.
No, you did. I knew you were going to be fun to talk to on this one, but I got other stuff in mind.
I even did research when he's got notes in front of him. Like, holy cow.
We're recording two episodes today to come out at later dates here, but regular listeners of the show, Lawrence Patrick Burke has to go on his sabbatical to become South Beach Larry until around March when he has to come home for St. Patrick's Day.
He gets that nice shade of lobster.
So this is going to be
that's right.
This is going to be one of our last episodes with you here just for a little while until we bring you back up for March. So we're going to need more guests in here. So Tristan, you definitely earned yourself a spot on that one. Thank you for that here. If you guys like the podcast, do us a favor. Check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud. Subscribe to the show if you can. It really helps us out. Leave us a review. That helps us out too. We are climbing the rankings on iTunes. I'm really happy about that. This show is a passion project here. It actually costs us money. Mike and Ming are very fair to us on that stuff, but I do shell out cash in order to make this thing happen here. And as long as people are liking the show, then I'm completely okay with it. This is my passion project. But if you leave us a review, it really helps us out. Confront somebody about the show, corner them. If someone leaves their phone unlocked, subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah, don't do dick pics. Subscribe to American Lives.
KP's buying around for the house. Maybe you can return it with a positive review.
Yeah, that's all I ask, man. So that being said, if you want to follow, check me out for stand-up, anything like that, support the show. KP at KP Burke Sucks on Twitter, at KP Burke Sucks on Instagram, KP Burke on Facebook. I also do have a website up. It's kpburkecomic.com. Do me a favor, check that one out too. My good friend Natty Bumpercar made that. That being said, this is the line we're going to go out on for American loser Dan Sickles, the man who shot Philip Barton Key dead in the street for banging his wife, used the temporary insanity defense and it worked, the man who banged the deposed Queen of Spain, all right, the man who had his leg blown off at the Battle of Gettysburg and then visited it in a hospital, the former Grand Poobah of the Carolinas, the man who embezzled his own statue memorial money, all right, was once asked, Dan, why is there no monument to you at the Battle of Gettysburg? And Dan Sickles, in Dan Sickles fashion, looked back in and goes, hell, the entire battlefield of Gettysburg is a monument to Dan Sickles. And that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that is Major General Dan Sickles, American loser. Thank you.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.